Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RT.ie is our number. You would recall, I hope, Sinead O'Leary on the programme a number of weeks ago. Sinead, as you know, was attacked and stabbed 30 times by a man called Peter Whelan. Nicola Sweeney, who's Sinead's pal, was murdered on the same occasion by Peter Whelan, and Sinead was basically calling for a victim's right advocate to be appointed to the new parole board, as she had discovered that Whelan had been out on day release from prison and in the same city as Sinead and indeed Nicola's family still live, Cork City. And Sinead said during that interview that if he gets out, which is likely, by the way, the family or Sinead weren't told this man was being allowed out. But Sinead said if Peter Whelan gets out, she will leave the country. She's in such fear and dread of him. Now, Marion Leonard is on the line. Marion, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you? I'm just looking at, I know every day, Marion, for you and your family is difficult. But if baby Jessica had not been murdered by Frank McCann, who also murdered your sister, Esther McCann, baby Jessica's mother, she would have marked her 30th birthday this month.
That's right, on the 10th of March.
That's right, well, yeah. I remembered.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was this year that she was killed, that she was murdered by McCann.
In 1992, was murdered, the two of them were murdered.
Yeah, he set the house on fire. And,
yes.
Okay. And where is McCann now?
He's in Arbor Hill and has been since the trial in 1996.
Okay, and how long is his sentence?
His sentence was two consecutive life sentences.
Okay. Now, as Sinead pointed out to us, and you have as well, you discovered, now obviously COVID has changed things, bizarrely. Mm. Changed things positively, I think, for you. But you discovered that pre-COVID, McCann was being allowed out of Arbor Hill Prison unaccompanied.
Well, it wasn't discovered, Joe, right from the beginning, from when he was incarcerated. The victim's liaison officer was on to me, let me know whenever he was going and what was happening with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually going to email you when I was listening to Sinead last week.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look up irishprisons.ie, there's an application form there for victims, specifically for victims, that can express an interest in knowing what the attackers are at the time and when they're being released. So I am actually, and my family is told, every time McCann is left out.
Okay.
In 2018, he started getting escorted day releases. That would mean he was about three in the year, the same as what Sinead was saying about Peter Whelan.
Mm.
He would have had 3 day releases in that year set in on the recommendation of the parole board. And then very quickly it went from that to unescorted visits to the city centre or wherever he chose to go.
Mm.
And then he had a course that he attended in Ballyfermot, got on the bus at Arbor Hill, got off the bus at Ballyfermot, and was free to do as he wanted. He had to be back to the prison by a certain time. But at all times, the victim liaison officer emailed me and let me know.
Okay.
And when I expressed concerns about places that he was attending or going to be, they'd let me know that they could, back in the earlier days, they could change it. Now, I think GDPR may have interfered with the frequency of or the amount of information I get.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, on behalf of the victim liaison officers, who are exceptional people, they really do keep in touch. But you have to ask them. They can't approach you now.
Okay.
So you actually have to fill in a form. It's online. It's very simple. And every member of the family who wants to be informed has to fill in the form separately.
Okay. Why did Frank McCann murder your sister Esther and your niece Jessica?
He murdered them to protect his persona and his image within the Irish Swimming Association. Mm-hmm. He had fathered a child with one of his students. And that child was born in August 87, 5 months after he had married Esther.
Okay.
And Esther and Frank were going to adopt Jessica officially to make it correct, because it was a family adoption.
Yeah.
It was going through the adoption board to have it done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother of that young girl made an objection to the adoption board to Frank having anything to do with the little girl. And
because she was arguing that he had abused her daughter.
Yeah.
Yes.
And who knows how many others, but he'd abused her daughter. So it was actually said that had it been a little boy they were adopting, she wouldn't have objected.
Mm-hmm.
But she did object. And Frank was told that early in the summer. Then the adoption board went on their summer recess. He was told it in the presence of their solicitor. The solicitor didn't tell Esther, and Frank didn't tell Esther. So none of us were aware of this impediment. And his way out was to kill Esther and Jessica. And that's what he planned from that summer. Repeated attempts on their lives, where he could have changed his mind or had a change of heart or whatever. And he succeeded in killing the two of them on the 4th of September 1992, when he burnt them to death.
And he knew that it was coming down the tracks, that this impediment to the adoption was going to emerge and he would be discovered to be an abuser.
Esther had an appointment with the adoption board. She was murdered on the Friday. The following Monday, herself and my brother were going into the adoption board to put pressure on them to make a decision.
Yeah. Because you didn't know what was the reason.
No.
Or neither did Esther.
No.
So McCann saw this as a way of ending that trail, because Esther, God help her, would be dead, and Jessica would be dead. So that's the end of any connection with the adoption board.
Yeah.
And that's the end, he thought.
He never tried to kill Esther on her own. It was always the two of them.
And he cut the brake pipes in her car. He broke a gas pipe. Not all, of course, when he wasn't there.
Yeah.
He tampered with her. Many attempts on her life did he make before he succeeded in murdering it.
Three attempts before, and sort of minor gas leaks as well. But we think that was just setting up the major gas leak when he severed the pipes under the floorboards in the kitchen. And he went back out to their pub in Blessington and left the gas escaping into the house.
And he could argue, there's a problem with the gas.
He was going to sue the gas board.
So he was planning.
Yeah. He would have gotten a very substantial, I would imagine, sum of money if he'd succeeded on the gas one.
And then he said he was being threatened. There was graffiti. Obviously, he wrote the graffiti, threatening himself, Maria.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty, to say the least, an evil, evil plan, which from his point of view, was going to result in the death of Esther and Jessica, his wife and his child, Esther's child.
Jessica was Frank's
niece, effectively. Yeah.
But I mean, as far as we were concerned, and as far as Esther was concerned, Esther was Jessica's mammy, and that was it.
Yeah, of course. Just while you mentioned his family, could, and that form that you mentioned, Marion, could a member of Frank McCann's family fill out that form and ask?
They have done. Yeah.
But if, and I'm not saying they are, if someone was positively disposed towards McCann.
They're certainly not, Joe.
I did not, okay.
No.
Okay. Now, the other aspect of it is, if you listen, as a lot of people did, and it's still available to the incredible podcast, Where is George Gibney? Gibney was a visitor to the house in Rathfarnham, an abuser, a paedophile, still on the loose in America. Derry O'Rourke, another national swimming coach. Gibney was national swimming coach. McCann was president or going to be president of the... He had various titles within the Irish Swimming Association. My God, that was some corrupt organisation in the 1990s. But you say you have a memory of Derry O'Rourke, George Gibney and Frank McCann in the kitchen of his home, the home where he murdered Esther and Jessica.
Well, they would have been frequent callers. Yeah. Meetings would have gone on in the house, and there was a little breakfast room between the kitchen and the front of the house where they used to meet. And they'd be around the table, and if myself or Esther walked through the kitchen, silence, just total silence, nothing, you know. And as I said before, the only impression that myself and Esther had was that they were very rude and very arrogant. Mm. And that was, you know, there was no charm about them. Any of the three, including, you know, there was nothing that they wanted to interact with us about. And, I mean, Jessica, even when Jessica was born, Jessica was such a cute little button, you'd think, you know, that they'd just pay her a bit of attention, but they never did.
And they were two evil men as well.
They were, but sure, we didn't know, Joe.
But when you, I don't know whether you have, I know, if not recently, that incredible book by Justine McCarthy, Deep Deception. I cannot recommend it highly enough for people to get a glimpse of the horror that was going on in that organisation at the highest levels. And a number of people turned a blind eye, as we know.
Yeah.
And that we should never, ever forget that. Because, as you say, these three men are still alive. And the possibility is, I think McCann is 61 this week. There's
That's
a possibility he will be allowed out.
He's heading towards it, I think. That is part of the reason I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
And it's the reason that we make the submissions to the parole board every time a parole hearing comes up. Because he shouldn't come out.
Ever.
Ever. I don't, and never have believed in an eye for an eye or the death penalty, but I don't think he should ever be released back into society. There's no telling what he will do, and nobody can assure me that he won't murder again or hurt someone again. And his presence of him being out is hurt enough.
And when he was on those day release pre-COVID, was there a possibility one of, indeed, his family or your family could have bumped into him?
Well, my nephew actually did. But he wouldn't have known Patrick at that time because he was only a little fellow when, but he knew him, certainly. The families have grown up and they're, but so his memory of them, I presume, is as of children, but they certainly know his face.
Yeah.
And he hasn't changed. When I saw the photographs of him, I think they were in the Independent that time when he was doing the courses in Ballyfermot, I just thought, gosh, he looks exactly the same and very strong.
And he hasn't aged in that sense.
No, he's been in a time capsule.
And do you know if he's ever apologised or admitted or attempted to?
He has never, ever apologised. He has never, to any of us, shown remorse. Maybe he does show remorse when it's necessary, when he's dealing with some of the counsellors inside. He, as Paul Carney described him, as a consummate actor.
Yeah.
So he probably is still manipulates, and I believe he does. So, you know, well-intentioned people, as he seems to be able to find all his life, can be fooled by him.
I wonder, was Derry O'Rourke ever in the same prison as McCann, I wonder?
I don't think so.
No, I saw Derry O'Rourke in prison, but he was in the Curragh.
Yeah.
When the Curragh was open. He saw me before. Well, I saw him and he... in the distance, and talk about being fortified. Immediately, I was being brought around on a tour of place. I was on summer holidays actually, and I just asked, could I see how the prison worked?
Mm-hmm.
And his big frame came through the door, and the minute he saw me, he turned and You know, his big arrogant swirl, he was gone again. Mm. But just to remind people, because it is so you're arguing, and you want to get, just as Sinead wants that name Joseph Whelan out there. She wants that Peter Whelan. That's why she wants Peter Whelan out there. You want Frank McCann's name out there. You are not going to let this go.
No. How can I, Joe? How can my family be safe? Yeah, and it's not just my family. I mean, they're releasing him into society. There really is no telling, and no minister for justice can say to me, he's cured, he's better, he's reached a proper stage of remorse, and he won't ever offend again. How could anyone stand over that? I'm very concerned that Minister McEntee, that Helen is actually going on maternity leave on the 30th of April, and I'm kind of hoping that she will have made a decision by then. Because as you were saying about Sinead's, Peter Whelan's parole hearing was also heard in November. And that looks like the board sat in November and maybe got through a fair few cases, and the recommendations are with the minister. The final decision is with the minister. So it's in her hands.
But just to remind people again, and the deviousness of this man, this killer, Frank McCann, baby Jessica is born in March 1991, as we say, would have been 30 this month. In July, Frank McCann reports a gas leak at the home on Butterfield Avenue in Rathfarnham. Yeah. A bore gas fitter finds no leak. And July the 16th, 13 days later, there's another gas leak reported, and the bore gas arrived within 20 minutes, and they find a Class A gas leak requiring urgent action. This leak is in a pipe going into the house. July 26th, another gas leak reported, but no leak found by the fitter. On July 28th, Esther wakes up in bed, obviously, and smells gas. She leaves the house carefully, pushing the car down a driveway before ringing Frank McCann, her husband, in the Blessington pub. And he telephones the gas company and complains of a serious leak. Fitter arrives at 8 a.m. and a colossal presence of gas is found. The leak is the result of a complete parting of two gas joints. Could only have happened after heat had been applied to the joints and they had been prized apart. The joint had been installed a week earlier when a gas meter was being upgraded. Gas level was sufficient to cause an explosion if a match struck or a light switch turned on. On the same day, the adoption board decides to refuse McCann's application on the basis of the allegation made in an anonymous call by a woman saying that McCann had a sexual relationship with her daughter, who conceived a child by him when she was just 17. She was being coached, so to speak, swimming by McCann. The adoption board then, August the 11th, Esther, woken by telephone ringing, finds the electric blanket on fire in her bed. The blanket is taken away by Frank McCann and is never found. August the 13th, McCann reports to Rathfarnham Garda Station that he has received threatening phone calls at his home. On the same day, he reports to Blessington Garda Station that he has received an anonymous call at his pub 2 weeks previously. And he also refers to calls to his home. In mid-August, a publican in Wicklow receives threatening phone calls to pay up or be burnt out. Now, we now believe that McCann made those calls.
Yeah.
August the 31st, McCann claims a slogan, "Born You, B-A-S-T-A-R-D, is painted on the wall of the pub. On September the 3rd, McCann, and you can be guaranteed, by the way, that's McCann's handwriting, Born UB. Gas installation at McCann House is tested. There's no leak. The barman sees the slogan printed on the rear wall of the pub. Esther tells, I presume it's you, Marion, she's going to have it out with Frank over the adoption issue. At 8:30, a woman attends word processing class given by Esther, leaves about 10 before Frank McCann arrives. McCann said he's home between 10 and 11. And then on September the 4th, barman says McCann is still there when the barman, left around 1 a.m. in the morning, which time there was about 30 minutes work left to be done. Blexington's chip shop owner says McCann came in for chips at 12:30 and left at 12:40. He heard the gate creak at about, she heard Esther the gate creak at about 1 a.m. and thinks it may have been McCann. Neighbours opposite McCann's house in Rathfarnham hears a car revving in the early hours. Then he hears a bang, a crash of glass, looks out the window and sees a ball of flame emerge from the door of the house opposite. A personal attack signal is received at Alarm Monitoring Centre. The code is Butterfield Avenue. Four people returning from a wedding in County Wicklow see the flames, raise the alarm, try to make an effect and a rescue, but are beaten back by the intensity of the flames. Neighbours arrive at the scene. Examination of house by Bord Gáis at 3:15 a.m. finds no gas leak. Arriving for work the following morning, a barman receives an anonymous call from McCann. Asked had McCann received the bad news. Felt caller was trying to disguise his voice. Who do you believe that caller was, Marion?
Well, of course it was Frank. Okay.
September the 5th, McCann makes a five-hour statement at Rathfarnham Garda Station and describes his movements on September 3rd and 4th. Again, the gas insulation examined, the system was sound and no leaks. How did they, and again, well, we'll go on, September the 18th, McCann, staying in the house of a friend, receives a mass card from Reverend Byrne. He collapses in the kitchen and a doctor is called. This person finds unaddressed envelope lying in the hall under the letterbox. Car wishes receiver well in new home and includes a newspaper cutting with the words lack of pigs. Gardaí on the 24th of September say the fire is now being treated as suspicious. Another pub owner opens posts and finds a warning message. On November the 4th, McCann arrested at the pub, and November the 6th he signs a statement of admission. Now, did he not go in to sign himself into some facility at one stage?
After that, after he did the confession in Tallaght Garda Station,
okay,
with his brothers and his solicitor present, he then admitted himself to Dundrum, to the institute there.
Yeah.
And while in there, then he met a young woman from mm-hmm. Stradbally in Waterford and set up a relationship with her. She was in voluntarily as well. So they both discharged themselves. Sorry, that was the John of Gods, actually.
Yeah, John of Gods.
And then they moved back down, the two of them moved back down to Stradbally. So Frank McCann was literally within a few miles of our home from that date until he was arrested out in Stradbally in April 93.
And then that incident at Esther's funeral, when he's driving through,
yeah,
was it through Tremor?
It was up at the top of the town near the church.
Yeah.
And we did, like, Tremor, we're very native to Tremor.
Yeah,
so
okay,
the whole town was out, you may as well
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just such a wonderful community. And he started shouting at the window of his car, and I heard him. I was in my car behind, and we were going up to some relations for dinner, mm-hmm. and he was shouting at some teenage girls over on the right-hand side that he was a free man. And you could see the girls, you know, this is people coming from a funeral, that you could see the reaction on their faces, but, oh, my goodness, it was just so wrong.
And he proceeded, didn't he, buy a cake for his
He'd organised that before he came down
yeah.
to the funeral. He'd organised it. It was his mum's 60th. And they went back to the pub in Blessington, having left Esther and us in Tremor. And he carried out the cake, lit the candles for his mum.
Okay, stay with us, Marion, because I want to, and because I want people to hear this argument. The argument you're making as to why McCann should stay in prison is not propelled or born of revenge. It's born of your belief, and part of that timeline explains it, that this is a very, very devious and bad man in terms of what he's done and what he's capable of doing. So, Marion, stay with us
yep.
till after this break. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking about the murder in 1992 of Esther and Jessica McCann, and they were murdered by Frank McCann, who was married to Esther and indeed was the, they were trying to adopt the baby, but was he was the blood uncle, so to speak, of young Jessica. And as I pointed out, Jessica would have been 30 this month. Esther was a very young woman as well, Marion. Like your daughter in the separate communication, and she's a young woman, says, I'm the same age as Esther was when her life was taken. Mm.
And so is Helen McAtee, as it happens. It was one of the things that struck me.
She's the same age. Esther's the same age.
Yeah. Minister. Yeah,
well, then you get a glimpse of, because most people can see that image, you get a glimpse of how young she was.
Yeah. I should just say one thing there, Joe, just I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Sure. Jessica was actually Frank's adopted sister's baby, so there was no blood relationship there.
Okay.
Just to clarify that.
Now, what about redemption, and what about after so many years in prison?
I don't think that's...
28 years...
I really don't think it's relevant. I don't think it applies to Frank McCann. He would have lived his entire life as a different person. He always was manipulative, and he seems to have been able to maintain different personas in different areas. And I wouldn't see him. He is really the definitive psychopath. You know, I don't think there's any redemption for him. And I know this re-socialization initiatives that go on in the prison, it doesn't apply to him. He doesn't have anybody to socialize with as such. His family doesn't see him. And it's not the same circumstances as somebody who kills in the spur of a moment and regrets it for the rest of their lives. It's controlled, premeditated murder.
What did you think of McCann yourself, Marion, before this horror?
I thought of him in relation to Esther as being quite a bland person, very conservatively dressed, awfully conservative for a young man, non-smoker, non-drinker. But she enjoyed his company. They seemed to have had a good laugh together and giggle together, certainly when they were courting. And he turned up, that's a very old-fashioned expression, but when he turned up to meet me for the first time, it was with flowers and chocolates, you know? And some, you know, charm, if you put it that way. But that all stopped nearly as soon as they got married. So I do feel he married Esther as a very good image front for him in the swimming association. He was advised by somebody that it's better to have married coaches because they are with children, so it was better that he'd be married. And certainly it was a very fast courtship. It happened very quickly, and it went from being, you know, I wasn't taking it particularly seriously in the beginning, but it certainly moved along very quickly. And once they were married, in a very short time, things changed. He took Esther away that time in August when the baby was born. They went to Portugal on holidays, and it was kind of a spur of the moment. It seemed like a surprise thing, and Esther was saying, oh, it's great that Frank can think of these things on the spur of the moment, and we're heading off to Portugal, and it was lovely. But it was to get her out of the way. So, again, it's very sad to think that in hindsight we know these things, but at the time... We didn't, and certainly Esther didn't have any idea.
And Marion, who first suspected McCann?
I have said before, the times that Esther was almost murdered, the attempts he made on Esther's life, I was usually out of the way. Certainly in July with the gas leak, I was in the hospital with James. When he did finally kill her, I was in Tremor. Again, I had to have a key to their house, and Esther always had a key to mine. And when I was in Tramore and I heard, I did kind of go numb for a while where nothing was coming into my mind. But when it did, I spoke to my cousin who was a detective, and I just said to him, you know, this can't be right. All of these things have happened. And I was suspicious. The guards wanted to talk to me straight away, but I asked them to wait until after the funeral because I was very concerned that Esther be buried in Tramore with my dad. So that I waited till the funeral was over before I actually met the detectives that were investigating the case. And I provided them with what they called a lot of soft information. And certainly I found them very good, very respectful and very kind.
And when you're making your submissions, because this is the point that Sinead made as well a couple of weeks ago here, that Whelan can read the man who stabbed Sinead 30 times, the man who murdered her best friend Nicola, two very young women, 18, 19 at the time. But he can read her submission. You know McCann can read yours.
But you have a choice, Joe. You can do it directly to the parole board.
Okay.
Or you can do it open, which is from the very beginning we talked about this and we decided that it would be open, which means that McCann sees everything that's on the file as well. So you can have it either way. I certainly wanted him to know that we weren't forgetting Esther and Jessica. So I had no... I don't think any of the family had any qualms but that he would see what we wrote. No matter how sensitive or how heartbreaking or whatever we put on, he got to see. But it was with the intention that he would know we haven't forgotten them. Because victims are left out of courtrooms. The defence does the best, their best, to keep the names and keep their personalities away from a courtroom, whereas we wanted Esther and Jessica's names, goodness, heart to be kept to the fore.
And you also believe that the attempts that McCann made, and remember, he was presuming each attempt was going to be successful.
Yes.
But that the attempts he made coincided, you mentioned your son there, James, and who was going through very, very difficult medical situation at the time. Mm-hmm. Incredibly traumatic, to say the least. And do you believe McCann was using, he knew the family were distracted or otherwise?
Oh, look, we said it to each other about being careful. I mean, James's prognosis that June was that he wasn't going to survive.
Yeah.
And that he then would know, because Esther would tell him where I was with James or what I was doing. And when I heard of the news of Esther and Jessica's death, I was in Tramore.
Yeah.
And out of the way. So he certainly took advantage of our sadness and our distraction and our running around. And Esther was so supportive of James, and little Jessica was like a breath of fresh air when she'd pop in. No, much as I'd have to say when he was going through chemotherapy, I'd be thinking of the bugs and the snotty noses and all the rest of it. But sure, Esther wanted that Jessica and James and Esther there, so that was it. They were there at every turn. And he never got any calls or anything else from Jessica.
And again, to just that point, Marion, that and this, you make it so strongly in the documents that you submit to the parole board, which McCann will read. It's quite clear from those documents you are not, they are not written with the ink of revenge. They're written with the ink of a warning to people and protection for others against this man.
Yeah. And Joe, there could still be other victims who've been afraid to come forward or who have felt that their abuse, perhaps by McCann, were trivial because of what happened to Esther and Jessica. I don't believe that that young girl was the only young girl that he would have taken advantage of or groomed, whatever those words are.
Yeah.
So there are probably more victims of his who don't feel it necessary to come forward. But if it's of the healing benefit to them, I would urge them to do so, but only if it's of benefit to them.
And I should point out that, that your James, a young man, died in 1993, which is just when all of this was... McCann was arrested a couple of weeks.
2 weeks later,
A couple of weeks later. The other bizarre... Now, maybe it's not bizarre, but I know this, this was a conversation you had with Rebecca a few months ago when a listener pointed out to us that... I don't know for what reason were they reading about the case, but they went to look at the address on Google Earth and the house is blurred out completely.
I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Until your Rebecca phoned me, I didn't know what she was talking about. And then I had to look and I didn't know. I think you can do it through Google, but
okay.
I don't know why, but obviously someone...
Yeah.
Must be the people in the house. I don't know, Joe, why it was locked out.
And do you pass the house often?
Yeah, most days.
And can you pass it?
I've had to pass it.
Yeah.
There's no option. I'm up the road, go past it. Most times, just keep going. Sometimes I have to stop, but that's all right.
And what happened to the house after the murders?
We have very good solicitor, and Mum put a caveat against the house so that McCann couldn't inherit Esther's share in it. So that went through proceedings, and when the house was auctioned, half of the proceedings of the proceeds went to Mum.
Yeah.
The rest I had actually let McCann's people he'd owed money to know that it was there. I don't know if they ever had access to it, but he'd left quite a few debts. And then when the house was sold, a family moved into it. I think it has been sold again since then. And there's a nice... Well, I've seen them coming out the driveway. Yeah. It looks like a happy house with children in it, which is lovely.
Yeah. And Marion... Finally, this must take a lot out of you.
It's exhausting, Joe. It is exhausting, yes. But it's something I owe to Esther to do, so I do it.
And you don't have to point it out. I'm going to point it out. You're still young. McCann is still young. Esther was in her 30s when he murdered her. Jessica was just, 18 months old. So this is not in the dim and distant past. If this man gets out, McCann gets out, he has the possibility of another 30 years of living free.
He also has an education behind him now that will take him into computers and behind the scenes in computers, so he can be anywhere. And... Yeah. He will be expert enough to be able to hide himself. But he killed two innocent people and he should not ever come out. And he killed a child in particular.
And a reminder, which is a very strong point you've just made, that there is no statute of limitations on crimes.
No.
If anyone else has any information about McCann, no matter how... distant they think it is, it would help if they came for, and I know your point is that maybe it would help them, but you don't want to...
I would only say, Joe, only if it would help them. I don't want anybody else hurt.
Okay. Anyway, Marion, stay well, and I know your daughter is called Esther.
She was Big Esther and Little Esther we had.
Big Esther and Little Esther.
Big Esther was Little Esther's godmother. And they were very alike.
But little Esther, who's now the same age as Esther was when she was murdered, will not let this go either.
No, No, absolutely not. It's something that's in our lives and will always be in our lives. Now, Joe, it hasn't stopped our lives, just to say that. I mean, we have achieved, we've continued on, we've enjoyed times. It would have been more enjoyable if Esther and Jessica were with us, but we have.
Yeah. Say with us, Mark. Aidan O'Toole has phoned in. Aidan, good afternoon again. Aidan.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? Father of Gary, Gary O'Toole, the Olympic swimmer, the one who almost single-handedly, I know with great support, exposed Gibney when Gary was, what, 16, 17, 18. What an incredible thing he did, as outlined again in the podcast, Where is George Gibney? Did you know McCann, Aidan?
I did, yes. Yeah. I served on committees with both Frank McCann and George Gibney at Leinster level and Irish level. And I can safely say that they're two of the most devious people that I've ever come across. And anything that they say, they work on at least a year in advance. They work. That's the way, the method of how they work. They plan everything in advance. Everything is planned to a T.
Yeah.
And that's why I concur with everything that Marion is saying there in regard to the attempts that are made on her life and Jessica's.
Incredible. Incredible. The planning that went into it. Would you agree with Marion that she believes he's still a danger, given that...
I certainly think he would be still a danger, because he's one of these characters that would come across and very respectable-like, and everything he does is perfect. So it's the way these people work in advance and plan things, you know. I would be worried about Marion's safety even, because he's the sort of guy that wouldn't mind going back to prison again, and he would do damage.
That's the advice we've had as well, Joe.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've met Marion once or twice with Esther at swimming galas.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'll give you one occasion. I remember up in Belfast one year, the Nationals were on, and Gary was going through the stage of, he had left kidney at the time, and Frank McCann was the stroke judge in this 400 individual medley event, and he disqualified Gary for a turn, and Gary won the event by about 13 or 14 seconds,
right.
And the guy that was second, Philip McGillian, broke the Irish record.
Okay.
So Gibney had already gone on to McCann to make sure Gary was disqualified. And that's how they work.
Yeah.
They work in advance on everything.
Because when
that's just a little example of how they operate.
Because when Gibney realised that Gary O'Toole was copping on to him, Gibney blanked him immediately, didn't he? He bad-mouthed him.
He bad-mouthed him, yeah. He went to the press and everything.
Yeah,
and,
sure, he did it on RTE. Remember during the Olympics, Aidan? When Gibney was an RTE panelist, and he had a cut at Gary.
Well, unfortunately, Joe, that's the way these people work, you know, and they get into very powerful positions. Just like McCann was next to be president of the Irish Amateur Swimming Association when Chalky Boyd approached him and told him that Gibney had abused him, and McCann said, "Oh, thank." I won't say a F-U-C-K, that it's not on my role, because I'm due to be president shortly. And that's all he was interested in being president of the Swimming Association and having a badge and being in a prominent position. You know, and there's a way to treat somebody that tells you that they were abused and just ignore them, like a lot of other people in the Swimming Association at the time when Gary confronted them. They said, you know, it was sour grapes. And I can see how they thought that, because Gibney had bad-mouthed him and they thought Gary was just looking for a revenge, but far from it.
But their whole, and again it came out in the podcast, Aidan, the whole MO of senior people in the Irish Swimming Association was to disbelieve. When Chalky made complaints about Gibney, he was dismissed as well. He said, what did someone say? He had a fall and hit his head or something. And
that's right.
Chalky
yeah.
wasn't talking sense. I just wonder, and that is one of the aims of the podcast and one of the aims of the interview today with Marion, to try and keep those names there, because Gibney is still a free man. But remember, there's no statute of limitations on crime. If you commit a crime, please go to the Gardaí. And if you commit a crime outside the state, please also go to the Gardaí when he was on these trips, which he was using as well. And the same with McCann. Stay with us, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Mary Leonard, who's on the line, is the sister of the late Esther McCann, who, along with her daughter Jessica, was murdered by Frank McCann, Esther's husband. Margie Dunn. Margie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Tell us of your involvement and your family's involvement with Frank McCann.
Okay, I come from a family of Coopers. My father, grandfather, and et cetera, all the way down were Coopers.
Okay.
And one of my uncles is called Seamus Dunn.
Right.
And he was, I understood, to be the last Irish distiller's Cooper.
Okay.
Right, and he got a sum of money and he invested, you know, with his redundancy, he invested in a cooperage with Frank McCann.
Okay, and just to remind people, Coopers, it's an incredible craft and skill and profession, but they make wooden barrels that whiskey or whatever matures in. It used to be the same for Guinness, but it's an incredible skill. Okay, so Seamus and Frank McCann, Seamus Dunn and Frank McCann
they set
Coopers.
Up a cooperage company now. As far as I remember, many years ago, it was I think it was Irish Craft Coopers.
Okay.
Now, what they did, among other things, what they made were half casks for making, they made them into flower pots.
Okay.
The ones you see in garden centres now.
Yeah.
And they sold them. Now, they soon after they set up the company, my uncle told me they were having a show in the RGS.
Right.
Okay. And I obviously went over to see their lovely stand, which was absolutely fabulous. They had, they had the planters all around, and then they had water fountain with water coming into the actual barrels or half barrels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I met Frank McCann. I just didn't like him. I told him I was my uncle's niece, and he just wasn't very, very nice to me. And I just moved on. I just found him a very unpleasant person. And I mentioned it then to my uncle the next time. My uncle came in to me because I had a shop in town, and I sold the half casks as planters. And he told me that he was being treated very badly by Frank McCann, that he was doing all the work while Frank McCann was dressing up every day and going out to do the selling. So the thing wasn't working very, very well in my uncle's estimation.
Yeah.
And the next time I saw my uncle, he told me that the place was set on fire.
Wow.
And that was the end of the business.
He helped set up that, Margie, in the RDS. Myself and Esther did the flowers.
Oh, and it was absolutely fabulous stand. Absolutely
amazing
stand.
And there was a big investigation into that fire. I don't know how it worked out for your uncle.
Yeah, he just said he thinks he set it on fire for insurance.
He pulled out what he needed the following day.
Sorry?
He pulled out what he needed for refurbishing a pub the following day. Wasn't in the building, luckily enough.
Yeah.
And his granddad's toolkit, big chest of tools from back when they were first in the cooperage, in the coopering business in Guinness's, was also saved from the fire.
Oh, really?
And we just thought, wasn't that lucky?
You're very lucky to have it, yeah.
Is your uncle still with us, Margie?
No, unfortunately, he's deceased a good number of years ago.
Okay.
And I just know he had a very unpleasant experience with him.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd share that in case, because it hadn't been brought up in the...
Yeah,
the fact that
he
set the place on fire and the place in the house and the cooperage, it's all very strange.
But he was never charged with that.
I don't remember
too
much.
The insurance
company
settled it. They came to a settlement.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
And that's what he was after.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understood, yeah.
And he used that money then to buy the cooperage and the pub in Blessington.
Mm-hmm. Really? That's interesting now, yeah.
Yes, yeah. He didn't have enough, so he had to borrow from my brother as well, but that's how he got the pub in Blessington.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, Joe,
he saved
his chain of honour for the Leinster Swimming Association as well, so that shows you how much was planned. You know, the similar thing with the cooperage.
Marion, just a communication from one of Esther's friends. What I really want to get across is what a gorgeous girl Esther was. Clever, funny, thoughtful, kind and empathic. Marion is right. McCann is a psychopath. He should not get out. I would prefer not to read out my name for obvious reasons. None of us suspected Frank at the time, but we suspected quite quickly afterwards. We haven't forgotten Esther or Jessica. Frank's family were appalled by what he did. They are a good, decent family.
Absolutely.
Just to remind people. Bernard McCann. Good afternoon, Bernard.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you? How are you, Marion? Okay.
How are you doing, Bernard? Good to talk.
You are the elder brother of Frank McCann.
Yes, yeah.
And you're listening to Marion.
Yeah. I mean, she's a superwoman for what she has done for the last God knows how many years. Mm. And I just wanted to fill in, you know, some of the things that have been said, like Marion was mentioning about fearing when he gets out.
Yeah.
I would be fearful. Absolutely. The man does not deserve to get out. If you think of how devious he was when he set up this whole scenario to murder Esther and Jessica. Mm. And yet, I have been informed that if you go in front of the parole board and you do admit liability and, you know, mea culpa and all the rest of it, it will help your case in some shape or form.
Right.
He has never, ever attempted that. He has an ego as big as anything. And I think the man is dangerous. Absolutely dangerous.
But he is your younger brother.
My younger brother. I don't care. I gave evidence against him, Joe, in court. And I would give evidence against him any day for what he did. If he had robbed a bank, Joe, I've always said to people, if he robbed a bank, I would let the guards just do their work. But not when you take a life, especially an 18-month-old.
And, Bernard, have the family heard from Frank McCann?
We have no interest in hearing from him.
Have you not? No.
Every time I see his photograph, it sickens me. All our family. We have no interest in that man at all, in any way, shape or form. There's no redemption with that man. None.
And did you suspect him at the time? So
No. Leading up to it, just to give you an example, blood being thicker than water, when he was originally arrested and he was brought down to Rathfarnham Graduate Station at one stage, and we were told to be back in an hour or two, whatever it was, and several hours later, after the hour or two, he hadn't. And I'm not proud of it, but I went down and I asked to see who was in charge. And it was a chap called Tony Sorkin, an absolute gentleman, who I'm still friends
with.
And I went nose to nose, unfortunately, with Tony Sorkin. I was so upset that my brother, my next eldest brother, was in the station. I was told it's an hour or two, and now it's 3 or 4 hours, and you still haven't done it, and this, that, and the other. I lost the plot. Mm. And Tony he said to me that after this whole thing was over, he says, Bernard, as soon as you reacted the way you did, we knew you had no hand, act, or part in this. I knew nothing because I was so honest. But the man, none of us knew. None of us knew.
And what was he like growing up, Bernard?
If you want to use the word normal, I mean, that's the only thing. He was no different than the rest of it. He was fairly driven in certain matters in his life. I mean, that's everyone has said. He was trying to guess where he was going in the swimming association.
Yeah.
He was a very good swimmer as well in his time.
Okay.
But driven, yeah.
And were the family aware? Well, it all came out subsequently that he had abused a young woman who was swimming and she had a baby.
No, nothing, Joe. Absolutely zero. Zero.
And Bernard, how have the family managed then in terms of, do people say to you, are you the brother of Frank McCann?
No. Well, I think once or twice people have said it, but they've always said it in a very discerning manner. I mean, there's been no one ever turned around to me and said, oh, that's your brother, you know, you must feel bad sort of thing. Never, ever, ever, in fairness, never.
And he never contacted the family?
He was in touch when he originally went to prison, and my mum went in to visit him. I mean, he was still her son, he made sure she didn't come in. She wouldn't believe that he was innocent, and he more or less cut her off there and then. She never saw him again. said that was fairly early on that he went into prison.
So your mother, and Marion mentioned on the day that Esther was buried, your mother was 60, a young
correct.
Woman, but she believed her son was guilty.
Yeah, well, she did.
Yeah.
She did, yeah. She wouldn't accept. I mean, she was devastated. Like any mother, Jesus.
Yeah.
Any parent would feel. She was devastated, obviously. But I think in the back of any mother's heart is maybe there's a little bit of good or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's no good in this man at all.
My mother had great sympathy for Joan, actually. She always said that she'd rather be Esther's mother than Frank's.
Yes, I agree, Marion, in the sense that she had to live with it, inverted commas, the shame.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Is your mother now past, Frank?
No, she, she has, well, not great, she has dementia. She's been at home for the last 3 years. So she's not really with us as such. But, you know, she lived her life as best she could after.
Yeah, of course.
Had to affect her. Had to,
And did you ever, Frank, there are a number of siblings, are there?
There are. There were six of us.
Six of you.
Yeah.
It can happen in any family.
Oh, Joe, there's no... Yeah, it's just it's what it is.
And when you're gathered... I know you began again with your deepest sympathy for Jessica and poor Esther and your empathy with Marion and above all agreement with Marion that he shouldn't get out.
Word for word.
But do your family ever, when you're at gatherings or whatever, say, what in the name of God possessed them?
Well, initially, we you probably would have, but, I mean, you try to put it at the back of your mind. But as Marion says, it ain't easy. Yeah. It ain't easy. And one thing... can I have a second?
Take it. Bernard, you stay there and get a glass of water.
Bernard, so good to come on. It has been so difficult, and he was... You know, he was so strong in the courts and so good to us during the court time as well, and acknowledging the fact that the big brother had to get up on a stand.
Yeah.
Not anything you'd wish on anybody.
We'll be back after this.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Marion Leonard is the sister of Esther McCann and the aunt of Jessica McCann, who were both murdered in 1992 by Frank McCann, the husband. And he's still in prison, but before COVID he was being allowed out of Arbour Hill Prison unaccompanied. He's 61 this week, and Marion is pleading that he not be allowed out of prison, not out of any revenge, but she believes that he is still a danger. Bernard McCann is Frank McCann's older brother. Bernard, you believe he is that same argument that Marion is putting forward, that he is dangerous still?
Yes, I mean, why would you want to stay in jail as long as he's been there? If there was a methodology to get out a little bit earlier, on all he has to do, inverted commas, is apologise and admit it and so on and so forth. For a man who, as I said, did the devious things he did, you would think that would be easy, how he could use the system. But he's chosen not to, because in his words, he never did it or won't admit to it. And that's why he's going to, I hope he rots in there. Absolutely rots in there.
Bernard, he threatened you as well, didn't he? And Tony and us,
Yes, yeah, he did,
Yeah.
And, you know, it does bother me, the fact, I mean, can I just digress 1 second?
Yeah,
I mean, the people who will decide, I know that the minister ultimately will sign off on the parole, and these people on the parole board, good people all, I'm sure, and they do what they have to do and so on and so forth. I would just say one thing to them, and this regards to me, my family, Marion and all her family. Come walk in her shoes. That's all I'd say.
Absolutely.
Come walk in her shoes.
And I was, Bernard, would your family say that to the parole board, that you don't believe he should be released?
Absolutely. The man doesn't deserve to get out.
Yeah. That's the unanimous belief of
absolutely.
Your family. Yeah.
How could you have any other belief?
Yeah.
How could you?
And do you believe Marion would be in danger if he got out, given that she's been so high profile? Like, I read, it was a long piece in the Daily Mail on Saturday with Jenny Friel, Marion.
Yeah.
Like, even though I know the story, I think I know it inside out at this stage, because we've spoken before. My blood was boiling again. I couldn't get it out of my head.
Mm.
I had to, yeah. I sent it round to the crew on Liveline again on Saturday just to remind ourselves of this man could be out walking the streets on Monday or very soon without anyway.
I think it's hard to know, Joe, and is he stupid enough to go back inside? If he comes anywhere next or near any of us and does anything, as we all know, he'll only be on parole, and it's only license he's out on, and he just commits a crime, he'll be straight back in.
Yeah.
I just don't know if he's prepared to gamble, but by the same token, I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah. No.
Not by any stretch.
And do we know where he would go if he got out, Bernard? Has he kept contact with anyone, do we know, distantly? Or?
Not that I know of, no. Not that I know of.
And
there's a whole repatriation service, as you know, Joe. Yeah, you were a parole board. A parole officer, and he would be helped to find housing and a halfway house, and he would be entitled to social welfare payments. And chances are he would end up in South Dublin County Council, where I worked, looking for housing.
Yeah. As you've mentioned earlier, Marion, I mean, he has, I believe, a master's in computer science or something of that.
He's gotten on really well with the computer. I mean, you think, Bernard, that it was Esther used to show him how to use WordPerfect.
Yeah, yeah. So
she started his interest in it, and he's,
If you think of Joe, he has that to his name, and let's be honest about it, he will get work wherever he wants to get work, because if he's that well qualified, he doesn't have to be in an office.
That's true.
No.
Everyone works remotely now. He can work from wherever he wants to work, and blend into the background.
Yeah, incredible. And did you know Esther and Jessica? Did you come across them? You would have been at the wedding, would you, Bernard?
Oh, Jesus Christ, I wouldn't miss a party, no.
Okay. And you remember little Jessica and Esther.
And the birthday party, Bernard. The one birthday party we had.
For Jessica.
And unfortunately, Joe, I had the unenviable task of had to go down and down in the hospital to identify her.
Yeah.
That's my last.
Joe, fair play.
And Jessica was found in her cot.
Esther was found on the landing, Joe. She didn't go to the window. She went to Jessica. So we didn't see her because she was burned so badly.
Yeah. I don't know if it identified her by our beings, isn't that right?
Yeah. But she was throwing herself towards Jessica's door.
Yeah.
Aidan O'Toole, you wanted to come in there.
I just wanted to say, Joe, fair play to Bernard for coming on. It's not easy. But sometimes you have to draw the line and there's no coming back. You know, this guy is highly intelligent even before he went into prison and learned how to work a computer. And they're so conniving. I mean, I would fear this guy is capable of doing anything.
Yeah. That's why I'm just caught between the two stools of he is highly intelligent. If he's that intelligent, he won't do anything.
Or
else, if he does anything, he will never walk out the doors of that prison.
But Bernard, you know how arrogant he is, and if he made his mind up back in 1996 that he's going to get you, or he's going to get me, or he's going to get Tony Cirque, he won't have changed his mind. And I really do believe that. So you don't know when or where, but he made his mind up then.
And Bernard, can I ask you when he threatened you?
I can't remember the exact details, but he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Because you went evidence against him.
I did, yeah.
And what was the nature of the information you had?
I saw the scene of what happened. I was asked about his past and some various other things. It's a blur. It really was a blur. Yeah. But I did give the evidence, and it was the right thing to do at the time, and I would do it again tomorrow because, as I say, if you robbed a bank, somebody else can look out for it.
Incredible. Aidan, I'm very conscious as well. And I know you were the parents were. I don't know who, Bernard, in your case, who got Frank McCann interested in swimming. Was it a family thing, or was it a school? Or
I think it was in school, because we went to Temple Hall College, all of us, and okay. there was a pool there. I think initially, I missed that boat. I did a small bit, but Frank and my other brothers were all very much competitive swimmers in one way, shape or form.
Right.
When I first started in swimming with Gary, Frank and his brother were both very good swimmers at the time. So they were swimming with Terry Neuer.
That's right.
They probably started off learning in Temple Oak, so I think it was there all the time. It was in the blood, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jerry Hogan is on the line. Jerry's from Temple Oak, and just as we're talking about swimming in turn, your college. Jerry, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
You taught Frank McCann.
I did, yes. And I have to say, he was one of the quieter students in the class.
Right.
Never any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And very bright.
Yeah.
Very good looking.
Yeah.
And I was certainly shocked to hear what happened to him afterwards. But he was down in the Turner College swimming pool,
right.
That crowd, if you like. So that all happened, I think, mainly after school.
What do you mean that?
Certainly he was. And if he hadn't gone into the coopering trade,
mm-hmm.
he would have been a very bright university student.
Okay. And what did you teach him, Jerry?
Economics and accountancy.
Okay. And he shone at that, did he?
Yes. He would be, say, the top third of the class.
Wow.
But I emphasise what a quiet person he was. I would have thought he was a very deep thinker, but I certainly couldn't fault him in any way as far as trouble was concerned. He was no trouble.
And then when you heard about the murders, Jerry?
Absolutely shocked, and I don't live too far away from that house.
Yeah.
And shocked, but when I also heard about the other goings-on among the people in the swimming at that time.
Yeah, Gibney and...
You know, that whole circle seemed to have been... There was evil there. And I'm sure there must be an awful lot of victims who haven't come forward and whose lives have been ruined because of that circle. And it does put us all on... Anybody that has to do with young children, it puts us all on the qui vive that you must accept any genuine complaints about a person. Because even though it is hard to come by evidence, the victims are young people and they never complain. But if an adult complains that they suspect something is going on, I think it should be taken very seriously.
And then that's happened with Gibney, and I'm sure McCann and O'Rourke, when people did, when young children did complain they weren't believed, which was shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Having said all that, people who are in charge of young people, it's getting to the stage when they nearly have to be vetted to make sure there is nothing in their background that can cause problems later on.
Yeah. Okay, Jerry, are you long retired from teaching?
Well, I'm 88 now.
Oh, yeah.
I went the full distance
What, 40 years?
To 65 years of age, I went out to Kenya and do a bit of voluntary work, and then I do a bit of writing.
Okay. Okay. But you still remember McCann. You remember Frank McCann?
Vividly, fair-haired, pale-faced,
glasses,
very, very quiet.
Okay.
Luckily, you didn't have me, Jerry.
And I guess you didn't have my two sons either, because you would have remembered them for different
reasons.
I spent more of my time in the dean's office than I did in the class, unfortunately.
Poor Ray Kennedy.
I have to say that one of my greatest joys is when I meet past pupils, and I always say to them, well, did I do you any harm? Mm-hmm. And I am delighted to say, no, Jerry, you did us good. And that's my greatest consolation.
Well done.
And it is an incredible testimony. And it is evidence as well, Jerry, and you're right to point out the incredible trust that young people place in their teachers.
That's
why that trust, and indeed priests, and indeed adults in positions of responsibility, that should always be reciprocated. Unfortunately, in the world we live in, it isn't always reciprocated, as the Jesuits admitted themselves about this man, Joseph Marmion, a few weeks ago, in that remarkable statement that they issued. Marion Leonard.
It is very sad, Joe. Yeah, yeah. It is very sad for the colleagues and the management to find that somebody in their midst has turned out like that, has been responsible for spoiling young lives.
Ruining young lives. If you listen, Bernard, I presume, well, we're talking for the last 75 minutes about ending young lives, Jessica and Esther, but also the effect of the abuse, as comes across in, Justin McCarthy's book, and in Where is George Gibney, the podcast, is just so, so, so deeply traumatic. But everyone here is of the same view.
I would like to extend my deepest sympathy. Yeah.
Okay.
To McCann's victims.
I
pass by that house and I say a prayer.
Thank you.
For the Esther and the child.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Jerry Hogan. Marion Leonard, kind regards as always, and admiration for your incredible, incredible fortitude and love of your sister and your niece. May they rest in peace, safe in the arms of Our Lady, Queen of Heaven. Aidan O'Toole, thanks again, Aidan.
Thank you.
And be so proud of your son, Gary, which I know you are. And even though he had you up at 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock driving to swimming, but he's an incredible young man and it's an incredible family. Aidan, you as the father, Jerry Hogan, Bernard McCann. Kind regards, Bernard, to you and your family.
Thanks, Joe.
And whatever embrace that can come across the radio, and from what Aidan said there about you, what Marion said about you, the courage it took for you to take that stand in court and for to contact us today is immeasurable. Thanks indeed, and kind regards above all, Bernard, to your mother as well in these difficult times that she's going through. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Rebecca Meehan produced, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe at RTE.ie.